On today's episode of Surfing the Quicksand, I'm speaking with somebody who's gone through a bunch of different transitions in life, career, where they're living, relationships, all sorts of different things that keep giving lessons and lessons in those pivots that she chooses to embrace as doors to open for what comes next. And part of that was rekindling and revisiting a project from years ago to bring it to life. And I think the project is kind of fun. We're going to learn about her and her project today on Surfing the Quicksand. I'm your host, Kathy Bynes. My guest today is a woman who's gone through some transitions throughout life. And like me, she's one who started out in a career doing what she thought she was going to be doing and then made a big switch along the way. And a lot of life and transition happened that in midlife she's embracing. I think she started out in a job that a lot of people would be excited about and think, oh my gosh, that's the dream job. How would you ever leave it? And I can't wait to hear more about that. And then she moved into something that is also super cool. So she started in publicity in kind of the Hollywood setting, working for Miramax International. And then after a while there, she switched into wine and spirits. And she's been in kind of the brand building space for luxury lines. She worked for Bacardi, she worked for Moët Hennessy, and she works with all the fancy names like Dom Pérignon and Veuve Clicquot and Moët Chandon. All of this sounds very different from my life, but I think this is going to be such a fun story to hear. Not only her professional progression, but also transitioning that was going on at home. She moved from New York to LA and started over. Relationships started over, all sorts of things. And then in her 50s, she decided to publish a book, and it's a fun one, and we're going to talk about that. Welcome to the show, Danielle Frank.
Thank you so much for having me on your fabulous podcast. Excited to be here.
Well, when I first kind of connected with you and learned all these little fun aspects of stories, I'm kind of a Northeast girl. I was in human resources, kind of boring corporate world. I started my own business. When I started learning more about you, I'm like, oh my gosh, this feels like a fantasy life to me and completely unrelatable. And I think for a lot of people, they might find like, oh my gosh, I don't think I've ever met anybody who's done either of these things, let alone both. So I kind of want to start talking about your professional journey, if that's okay.
Yeah,
Good.
absolutely. Let's get into it.
So you started like, in your 20s, like early age in your 20s, working for like a big Hollywood company. Let's talk about that. How did you get into that space? What did you think it was going to be like?
Yeah, so for as long as I can remember, I'd always wanted to be in the entertainment industry. I just loved TV, I love film. I've been going to the movies ever since, I don't know, my parents were divorced when I was one, so seeing my dad every weekend, we just went to every and any movie, probably some that I shouldn't have been watching at like 4 years old, like Rambo and First Blood and, but I love it. I love all kinds of movies. But yeah, so I always just imagined I'd be in the entertainment space. I think that especially back then, my niece and nephew, they're in college. My nephew's a freshman. My niece just graduated, and I can see nowadays too. I think kids have it a little better. I don't know exactly like the curriculum they have in school and all that, but I and also with the internet, I think kids have a better understanding of like what's entailed in jobs. Back then, like we didn't really have an understanding. I just knew I wanted to be in the entertainment industry. Like I wish I had a better guide of like what avenue should I follow in the entertainment industry. And so in college, I interned at a publicity firm. My stepmother knew somebody, and I was like, oh, okay, PR, that sounds sure, that sounds great. I had no idea. And so when I graduated college, I lived in New York, and Miramax was at its heyday at that time, and it's the only studio in New York, so that's where I wanted to be. And through countless interviews, somebody I knew from college referred me to the international publicity department. Somebody was hiring an assistant, and luckily I got the job and started my journey there, and it was amazing. I mean, like you said, I mean, in my 20s, living in New York, going to the Cannes Film Festival, Berlin Film Festival, Venice, living in a studio apartment, but flying all over the globe. It was an amazing experience. It really was. And like I said, it was like the heyday of Miramax when all the great films were coming out, Good Will Hunting, Shakespeare in Love, Scary Movie, Scream, ev everything. It was definitely a whirlwind and an amazing opportunity. It really was.
So what was publicity, international publicity like? How did you spend your time? What was the work?
So it's a lot of logistics. So while it sounds glamorous and there were glamorous moments, it's a lot of logistics. So we were the ones that were bringing the films, so the talent from the films abroad, whether it's to a film festival or if we did a press tour, we promoted a lot of the films on like, a London, Paris, Rome press tour. So it's just a lot of logistics with our international distributors, coordinating the interviews, the schedules, the travel logistics. So it's a lot of, back of house stuff. But yeah, it's working with a lot of unique personalities. But the good news with that is, I was on the Miramax side. They traveled with their personal publicist, which I'm foreshadowing for things to come in this next conversation that we're about to have. But yes, they would travel with their personal publicist, and we would organize all the, like I said, the logistics, the interviews, the schedule, and so forth.
So you're in your 20s, your late 20s, getting into, the best places in the world and with celebrities in this Hollywood, and you knew you want to be in entertainment. So what happens next? What shifts? What starts to shift for you?
So I just with Miramax, I got to travel out to LA a lot, maybe once a month. And I've always loved Los Angeles. I had a friend in college that lived out here, and I visited her a couple times on summers. And man, it just was just I loved it. I loved, the sunshine and everything about it, and the feel of being around the entertainment industry, which, was at the core of what I was interested in at the time. So yeah, there was part of me that just wanted to always live out there. And then I was with my boyfriend at the time in New York, and all of our friends were starting, late 20s, all of our friends were starting to get married, because of course, I grew up East Coast, and 25, almost 30 years ago. Well, no, I'm 50, I'm turning 52, so I'm trying to do the math. But like about 20, 25 plus years ago, like as you reach your late 20s or mid to late 20s, that's when everyone was like, oh, got to be married by this age, have kids by this age. And I sort of just had this realization that, wait, I'm not ready for that yet. There's still a lot I want to do, and that time will come, but I'm not ready for that journey yet. And so I decided, like, that's it. I want to move to LA. If I'm going to do it, now's the time. So I broke up with my boyfriend and decided I didn't quit my job without having another job because I'm very type A. I'm foreshadowing for something else that's going to come up in this conversation. Yeah, so I just started looking for jobs in LA, and one of the PR firms that I knew, but they represented the talent that I used to travel with all the time. They were hiring, and they interviewed me, and at the time I was like, oh, I don't really want to do personal PR, but a friend that worked for the company was like, no, it's great, love it. And I sort of talked myself into it, and I was like, it gets me out to LA, I'll be able to move and have a job. And so yeah, I got the job, and so I bid adieu to Miramax. It was an amazing journey, but I was ready for that next step in my life.
I have to say, when I was, so I'm, it's probably around the same time, right? So I'm a little older than you. I'm 50, I'll be 56 this year. And I was in my late 20s and all of my friends were getting married, right? It was that season where every month there was another wedding, right? And nobody's talking about kids just yet, but they were getting married. And I wasn't there and I didn't have a significant partner in my life. And I had been living in New York and living in New Jersey. And I was ready for a move. And I have to tell you this kind of fun little connection, which is I on the day it opened, I went to go see this little film nobody had heard about, Good Will Hunting, and I walked out and I said, "Oh, I'm moving to Boston." And my best friends were living up here, and I'd been looking for a change. And within 6 weeks, I had gotten a job up in Boston, and I moved up here. And I credit a lot of that to that same period of time and that little movie about Cambridge and Boston. I'm like, this is where I'm going. But to be in that same spot, and like, the only way something's going to happen for me in my life now is if I make a big change. And geography felt like the big driver for me. And it sounds like similar to you around the same time.
Yeah, wow, it's so interesting to hear that Good Will Hunting prompted your move. I love that. How about them apples?
Exactly.
Great movie. One of
Yeah.
my absolute favorites.
Yeah. So you decide, all right, it's a job I never pictured myself in, but it gets me to where I think I want to be.
Yeah, so I moved out here and no disrespect to personal publicists, and the job there's a lot of great ones. I think one, the company that I went to, it was a very toxic company. It was run by two women, and I don't align with how they run the company. I mean, my first day I walked in and like three other publicists were in their office like crying. I'm like, what is going on here? What did I get myself into? And I was there just only 3 months. And in that 3 month time period, I mean, I will say this, when I was at Miramax, sure, in my 20s, maybe I went out the night before. There were many days that I was like, oh God, I don't want to go to work today. I want to stay home. There was never that day where I was like that pit in my stomach, like, oh, I don't want to go into work, like that angst. When I was at this PR company, it just in 3 months' time, I can't tell you how many mornings I woke up with that angst, that like pit in my stomach. And that was just like one of the first defining moments of my life, just to understand, like, I was 29, 30. I was like, my God, I'll be working probably for the next 30 plus years of my life. Like, this is where we spend most of our time. What an awful feeling this is, to like, of course, nobody loves having to get up each morning and go to the office or go to work, but you have to enjoy what you're doing in some capacity. And you have to, to have that pit, it was really eye-opening for me. And I'm like, this is no way to live. Like, I literally, I wasn't having an ulcer, but I was like, now I can see what it feels like, just that not wanting to be somewhere. And I realized that, sometimes the most empowering decision is acknowledging that this job or relationship or whatever you're doing in your life, you're clinging to is costing you peace. And I remember, I was already in the back of my head, like, oh God, I got to think about something else. I got to see what else is out there. This isn't for me. And plus, personal PR, like, it's very much, I mean, I had dinner plans one night, and one of my clients was like, oh, I want to go walk the red carpet of somebody else's premiere. Like, it wasn't even their premiere. And I'm like, oh, I got to cancel my plans to like just to walk you down a red carpet. I mean, again, like, that's the publicity. That's a personal publicist job. But I've started to realize, like, I want to look after my life, not somebody else's life. So yeah, there was one day that and as I said before, I'm very type A, would never quit without having another job. Well, spoiler alert, I quit without having another job because there was something that ran in what we call the trades. It was the Hollywood Reporter, about this producer that I was one of my clients. Of his next project, and it wasn't announced yet. And so one of the owners of the company was like, how did this happen? Blah, blah, blah. And so I spoke to the producer's assistant, and he's like, don't even worry. He was like, so and so leaked it to himself because he's friends with the reporter. So it's like, okay, if the producer, our client, is leaking it himself, it's not on us. And so I spoke to the owner, and I was like, not a big deal. He leaked it himself. He gave him the story, and she was just so incensed because she didn't have control that she laid into me. And I was like, yeah. So right at that moment, I was like, thank you for this opportunity. I really appreciate it, but I think my time here is done. I mean, I said it a little bit more, professional, but yeah, I left. And
Yeah.
you know, some of that comes with naivety of like, you know, 29, 30, like, okay, I don't have a mortgage, I don't have a family to have to worry about. And so I quit because my personal happiness was just more important than anything. And yeah, and I so in that time frame, you know, I started looking and there were just no studio jobs. There wasn't anything going on. And somebody, my sister was working for an agency that worked for Bacardi in New York, and she said, "Oh, they're hiring in LA. You work from home, you know, you get an expense account, you get to run whatever, all this." I was like, "Oh, this sounds great." I mean, it was very like a big step back. I took like a 60% pay cut at the time, but I was like, "Oh, this will be temporary. This sounds great. I'll do this while I look because I'm working from home. I'll do this while I look for something else." So I started that job, and as you said, 10 years at Bacardi, and now I'm celebrating next month 12 years at Moët Hennessy, and hope to retire with them in, you know, another 10 plus years. I just, you know, was very, very fortunate to go from one industry to another that are both equally as amazing, interesting, fascinating, representing good brands. Before I was representing great movies, now I'm representing great brands, and that are great companies to work for, which is hugely important.
I'm curious. So I clearly hear like, oh, it'll be temporary while I figure things out. When did you know? Oh, I don't actually think this is temporary. I think I like this. I think I want to stay.
Yeah, I mean, pretty quickly on, just more and more. So when I started at Bacardi, I was at like an agency, and then they hired me within Bacardi pretty quickly. And yeah, it was pretty easy to see just like one, what a fantastic company it is with fantastic brands. It's not just Bacardi rum, it's Grey Goose, Bombay Sapphire, Dewar's, a whole portfolio. Yeah, it was just pretty quickly to see just, how, you know, I mean, it's a family run company, so like, you know, family run, and they treat you like family, and you're representing these great brands. Pretty soon thereafter, I realized, like, I think this is the next journey that I'm going to be on.
So you were really clear that you were an entertainment person from a very early age. Was alcohol something that you knew a lot about, or you know, did you find this to be as compelling an ecosystem to be in?
I mean, it was something that, you know, growing up, every weekend I spent with my dad, and eventually he got remarried, and we'd go to like nice restaurants. My dad liked food. I've turned into a big foodie myself. He's always, ex you know, I've always explored the trying new things. And but early on, like going to these restaurants, you know, they would have a nice bottle of wine. They would have an after dinner drink. So I started to see the ritual. And the appreciation of it, you know, and I started to understand how it amplifies, you know, the experience and the food. So it was something I didn't think it was something like, oh, I'm really interested in that. But then once I crossed over, when I had my interview with Bacardi, and they said, you know, you came from entertainment, what makes you qualified? And I said, you know what, it's all about sales, right? Everything we're doing in life is sales. It's like before I was selling an image, selling the idea, selling a story, selling, you know, the actor who played this role. Here it's about selling brands. It's about selling the heritage and the story of the brand. And that's what started to fascinate me, is the storytelling, because I realized, like, you know, I'm shepherding these brands that, you know, have so much history. You know, it's like Bacardi, learning about the Bacardi family and that legacy, and everything that happened in Cuba, and you know, how it's so fascinating. And I realized, you know, I think that's the bridge that I gapped between both careers, is it's all about storytelling, and I enjoy being a storyteller.
I wasn't prepared to start already asking you about your book, but boy, when you start talking about storytelling, it's hard not to. So you wrote a book, but not recently. Let's start talking about that storytelling experience for you.
Yes, and sorry for my nasally, it's allergy season.
For sure.
But yeah, so I've always loved writing. I've always, like, even as a kid, I would just have like a notepad of like poems or rhyme. I love to rhyme. I don't know why. I just like, I'm good at rhyming and I love to rhyme. But I just like always come up with like random ideas. And when a random idea sparks inside of me, like I have to write it down and expand upon it. So I've always like written things here and there, more like, short stories or poems. And then I started to realize that writing became therapeutic for me. Like, I use this example, like I was in a relationship once, and also with, we'll go into this, the life transition too, is my relationship with my fiance, who I eventually broke up with. I tried therapy and I found that I was lying to my therapist. And I was like, well, that's not supposed to happen. Like, there's something wrong with this. And I know the idea, the concept of therapy is, they're not supposed to give you the answers. They're supposed to draw it out of you. So you like talk about it and you hear what's going on so that you can come to those conclusions. And, so much of that is bringing it out. A therapist's job is to bring it out of yourself. And I started to see that writing did that for me. So even in the relationships, like when things weren't going right, or when I broke up with my fiance, I would just write to myself and like get it all out on paper and talk about it, talk about like the things. And so for me, writing it's like is my version of talking about it, and then looking at it and reading it and processing it. So yeah, writing always just became like not only therapy, but just I enjoy it. And I'm like, my mind is always moving a million miles a minute. So, I always just get random ideas and then I write them down. So I've always, yeah, I've a lot of my projects that I've thought about were proper children's books ideas, because I'm also just a glass half full person and, want to make the world a better place person. And so I just started thinking about like, kids are so impressionable at a young age. Like that was where I first wanted to go, was children's books and designing them in a way that teach kids. Like one book series I had was about like teaching kids about other cultures. And it was all about with the same messaging. Like we're all the same. We all sleep under the same star skies each night. Like even though somebody looks different than you, really wanting to have an impression on kids at a young age, because we see what's going on in the world even worse now, how mean kids are to each other, and it's heartbreaking. So I started thinking about kids' projects, as a way to try and, have a seat at the table to try and, have a seat at the table in how kids are, setting them up for, good behavior, and to try and, shape how they become as well.
It's really interesting. I know a couple of children's authors, and when I talk to them about their projects or things that they want to do and things, I'm always so amazed. I'm like, oh, I don't even think about children's brains and children's lives in the way that people who are so focused on saying, I want to bring a message to them really can be. Like, it's such a gift to be able to say, like, oh, what do I want to say? What do I want to leave with them? What do I want to inspire in them? So I love that you were really kind of started in that space.
Yeah, I mean that was my goal. I mean, of course, as you can imagine, getting published is really hard. And it was even harder back then when like you didn't have the internet to like guide you and AI to guide you in the process to be like, how do I, submit? And back then also everybody has a different submission process. It's like you had to print everything out. You had to do It was like applying to colleges all over again. Everybody had a different process on what you had to submit and the letter you had to submit with it. It was very daunting. And when you have a full-time job, it just became something, that I shoved aside. But then, yeah, with life pivots, with my relationship pivot, then I sort of pivoted to this book that I did bring to fruition. I wrote it 14 years ago, but only published it, a few months ago. And so that book came about instead of wanting to make an impression on the kids at an early age. This book came about being like, well, it came about in a lot of ways. So first, I had broken off my engagement with my fiance. He has kids from a first marriage. He decided he didn't want more, and I really did want kids. So that's happening. Simultaneously, I was watching my niece and nephew, who I'm very close with, and they were young at the time. And although very good kids, of course, kids have the propensity to whine sometimes. And I was watching them, and they were whining. And I said, Aunt Danielle drinks wine. She doesn't listen to wine. And then also at the same time, a book recently came out called Go the F to Sleep, which was a viral sensation, and it opened the door for this new genre of adult children's book. And so all those pieces of the puzzle, breaking up my engagement, realizing the path to motherhood might not happen for me, I also realized that doesn't mean the nurturing doesn't go away. And I realized that just because, I might not become a mom, it doesn't mean that I can't have a seat at the table on how, kids are raised. So all that came together with this aha moment of birthing this idea of the book that I released called A Wine Lover's Guide to Parenting. Because, as I said, instead of writing a children's book that's directed to kids, what about making a fun adult children's book that is, first of all, it's a great baby shower gift. You pair it with a onesie, but for the new parent or the any parent, a book in a fun, humor, lighthearted way, but shining light on like raising your kids, all related to wine terminology. But it really just is all about just like, raising kids good human behavior, teaching them manners, letting them breathe, learning how to, get back up when they fall. So trying to impress upon the parents before the babies are even born so that they're instilling that those good behaviors on kids.
It's such a, I love so many little different pieces of the story, and I think I want to take a few different directions out of it. First of all, I love that it's like this is a thing I created 14 years ago. It didn't go anywhere then, but in my 50s, I found the time, the space, the resources, the AI, whatever it is, to actually resuscitate it and bring it back to life. And that is an inspiration for so many of us who did things in our 30s and were like, no, now's not the right time, or nobody's interested, or couldn't really make it happen. And you put it on a shelf and you kind of forget about it. So I love that. And
Well,
the other
if
part,
I,
oh, go ahead, please. Yeah.
sorry, yeah,
Yeah.
if I could layer into that,
Yeah.
because I think that's a really good point is, yeah, I mean, we all have things, right, that we just want to do and we don't get around to, and it's not so easy. But I will say, this has always been something that I'm like, if I do nothing with this, it's going to plague me on my deathbed. I've always gotten good feedback about it, and I've just realized, again, with all these life pivots I've taken, they've become lessons for me to show me that, transitions, life pivots, they're not failures. They're invitations to what's the next chapter. And it leads you onto a new path that maybe you were meant to be on all along the way. And you don't know until you try. And that's the person I've become now, is I'm somebody that, I try and check everything off my proverbial bucket list. Whenever I can, obviously within anything within legal limits, I want to check off my list. I love game shows. I went on a game show a couple of years ago. Like, I just want to do everything and anything I can in this short little life we lead, because it is a short life, and we should do with it what we can, again, within legal limits. So this was always something that I was like, I've got to do something with it. And yes, now it's become a little easier with like using technology like AI to be like, what are the steps? Now there's hybrid publishing, which, because self-publishing was daunting to me, hybrid publishing, which is sort of like self-publishing, but you have a publisher behind you guiding the process. You're paying for everything, and you don't have, big publishing house. But so all these things, yeah, helped me to finally be like, great, I've got to do it. I've got to check this off the list.
I think the other thing that I hear, and I similarly, when I wrote my book, gosh, 7 something years ago, maybe 8, I was like, okay, this has to come out of me. I am meant to write this book. I am passionate about it. I feel really good about what I'm putting out in the world. And if nobody besides like my best friend and my parents read it, like that's okay. This is about me putting something out there that I think is important and impactful and meaningful. And even if it's not for everyone, even if it isn't a commercial success, I'm really proud of seeing it through and making the choices, the financial choices, the energy choices, the opportunity cost. By doing this, I couldn't do something else, and really prioritizing something that just really felt like burning inside of me, like, oh, this is a thing I think can be helpful, and I think I got to get it out there.
Yeah, and you know what, I think sometimes when you do that thing, you don't realize the other trickle down effect that can happen from it. Like this, for example, or this podcast, for example, when I started doing my publicity for this book, I mean, I've been doing the hustle, and I've been doing a ton of podcasts, which I love. As a listener, I love podcasts. It's such a great medium because it's just organic conversation people are having. It's not like, Instagram or this, where it's just a static post that's like, oh, isn't everything so great and rosy? It's real people talking about real crap, real stuff happening in people's lives. But what I love is, at first I started obviously my promotion of the book, but it's turned into doing all these other podcasts talking about really at the core of what I think is my story. Which is, all about the life transitions and, how my story is rooted in transition, in transformation. And I've really enjoyed shining a light on how embracing life pivots, even when they don't match the checklist, is both freeing and empowering. And for me, that's become the bigger story, which I love.
You've hinted a few times to kind of the relationship, the fiance, the ending the fiance, wanting kids, that not being in the cards. How do you draw that kind of through line of the personal pivots and transformation to where you are now?
Yeah, well, I think, the life, the career pivot, right? That was the first major one. And I think the beauty of it is that what I extracted from that is, like I said, pivots can be, lessons that propel you forward. And having gone through that first big pivot, well, I mean, two pivots, moving from New York to LA and then leaving the entertainment industry, to wine and spirits. I realized that embracing the change isn't failure, and it's actually quite the opposite. It can lead you, like I said, to discover a whole new journey, discover a new path. And it also taught me that I can bounce back. I was fine. I did it once, I did it twice. And with the relationship, now I was in my mid-30s and I was like, okay, now I'm ready for this marriage and kids. And then I started to realize he didn't want kids. And then when he proposed, he's like, yes, we can do it, we can have a kid. And as we were, starting to talk about the wedding, I realized he doesn't want more kids. And because then he'd be like, go back and forth. And look, there were many other issues with the relationship as well. It wasn't just about that. But I started to realize the way I felt while I was in it, and I started to see how unhappy I was in the relationship. And that sort of brought me back to when I was at that PR company and realizing that pit in my stomach. I mean, I remember laying in bed and he's, next to me and thinking about like, oh man, everybody on Instagram or Facebook is probably thinking how rosy everything is because I'm posting. Like, I'll never forget, there was a moment that we were in Buenos Aires and we just had this, like, I'm a foodie, and we had like this, like, 10 course tasting menu dinner, and my fiance, we were engaged at the time, and he's like, yes, I'm gonna have the real estate agent, we're gonna look for a bigger house, we can do this, we can have a kid, we can have it all, we can, because one of the reasons why he didn't want more kids is because he did that. He now wanted to just live his life like he was in his 20s. He was, he didn't want responsibility again. Obviously, he was a good dad to his kids when he had them, but he liked that he only had them, a couple days a week. He wanted his freedom and to go out and party and do whatever. I now was slowing down. I had my, fun and all that. And so we were at this dinner in Buenos Aires, and we had this, and I remember posting, and he's like, oh yeah, we could look for a bigger house, we could do it, we're gonna have a family, blah blah blah, we could do it all. And I remember posting like, Something probably cheesy, like, best life ever, whatever, so whatever I posted. And then immediately after that, we were going back to our hotel and he's like, oh, let's just have one more drink. And it was like, it's always him, like, one last one. Let's, and then he's like, God, I was like, I'm tired. And he's like, oh, one more. And then, like, he was meeting people at the place, like, come back to our hotel. We've got wine, like, wanting to, like, bring a party back to our hotel. And I was like, I'll never forget how it went from, like, 100 down to zero. I was like, he doesn't want, I mean, and then, like I said, there were other things with this, there were other things with this guy. But that just started to make me realize, like, he doesn't want this, he just wants to keep chasing the party and staying out to the bitter end and, watch the sun go up. And, so I just started to realize how unhappy I was in the relationship. And so it sort of clarified my values and it showed me, again, like, this is not a space I want to live in. And I realize it's just not going to be the marriage that I want. And so why embark on it if I know it's, not going to be what I envisioned? And yeah, I broke it off.
And I think part of why I started surfing the quicksand was kind of my commitment to helping midlife women get unstuck. And often the first step of that is even realizing you are stuck. Sometimes you don't know that. And it sounds like both times you were in these serious situations where you said, all right, I'm here for reasons, for good reasons. And it causes you to kind of brush away the signs and the flags until there's a point where your values are fully challenged in a way that you recognize it and say, oh, this is the big compromise of life. If I don't get myself unstuck now, there's no getting out.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, that's it's a huge realization, right? And it's not easy. It's hard. It's hard. But like I said, I think when you have one moment that propels you forward, then the important thing is using that, add that to your armory, to know that then you could do it again, and you could do it again, and you could do it again, because pivots is change in movement. It's not collapse. It doesn't mean failure. It's an evolution. It's, I think about it like you're on a bridge, right? You don't stay on that bridge forever. You're crossing over, and you do it intentionally, and it connects both chapters that matter. I have zero regrets about that relationship. I remember when I broke it off, my mom and sister were like, "Nah, F him. Why didn't he tell you he didn't want kids?" And I didn't tell them about the other stuff that was going on as well. There were plenty of other things, but I said, you know what? I don't blame him. And for the most part, he pretty much did tell me. Like, I just chose to see it how I wanted to see it. And in the end, I just realized, but I have zero regrets. It was a great time. We had, a great relationship, but I extracted so many lessons from it that now I'm going to cross that bridge. And it's helped me in future relationships to know what I want, what I don't want, what I will stand for, what I won't stand for. And it's been, sort of the recipe, the guiding force to how I establish future relationships, which has been great.
I think one of my favorite parts about interviewing people with stories like you on Surfing Quicksand is that that tide of resilience, right? Resilience comes out of these stories so often, and they are a function of what we've been through, right? But very few people develop resilience without a reason, right? That you just find and you discover along the way that you can build it and you can recognize it and you can lean on it.
Yeah, I mean, one trend, the important thing, like you said, is, it's extracting the lessons, right? Extracting the lessons versus carrying the scar. There's a difference between learning from something, and dragging that into the future, or just, carrying the weight of the what could have been the job, what could have been the relationship. It's okay. I learned from it. I armored myself. I'm going to use that to propel me forward onto this next path that I'm on.
Great. And children, I think are not never kind of came about for you.
So children never came about for me, unfortunately. But well, unfortunately and fortunately, I mean, and that's the beauty of it too, is, I always imagine being a mother. Oh, sorry, my dog next to me is like, hey, what are you
Right,
doing to me?
I have a
Relax,
child. I have a
relax.
child right here.
Yes, I'm a great dog mom, but you know what? Like I said, I realized that just because the path of motherhood doesn't happen, it doesn't mean nurturing goes away. And so that has channeled into other things. You know, I nurtured into my book, which I birthed. And, you know, I'm an aunt, not only to my niece and nephew, but I'm Aunt Danielle to so many of my friends' kids, which I love. I love being Aunt Danielle. I come in, get them hopped up on candy, take them out, do escape rooms, and then send them home to their parents so they're bouncing off the walls. But I love that. And the other thing it taught me too is, you know, all this to embrace the life that I now am on. I mean, you know, with my job, I travel a lot, and then I've always been a curious person with the world. So I love traveling the world. You just got back from Spain. I'm planning my next trip. You know, I've realized that, okay, the motherhood path didn't happen for me, but now I'm on this other path, and you know, I wouldn't be able to do all the traveling that I do if I did have a family. So I've leaned into this new journey of mine, which has been equally as fulfilling. You know, I know I'd be equally as fulfilled if I was a mom and on that path and not traveling. But you know, I've embraced this path I'm on, and that's why I'm like, well, this new path I'm on, I'm of having the freedom of not having kids, then I'm going to take advantage of that and do with it what I can while I'm, you know, healthy and can travel the world and do all that. So yeah, it's been equally fulfilling.
I think the use of the word fulfilling here, it really resonates for me, right? So, similarly, I don't have children. Again, my friends were getting married in our late 20s and having kids in our early 30s. And even, probably when I was in 30, I'm like, oh, I still think that marriage and motherhood are ahead for me. And by the time I did meet my husband, we were 34, and he had already been married and no kids. And for him, he knew he didn't want kids, having come out of a relationship where that had become clear for him. And for me, I was starting to feel like I'm old enough that motherhood now feels like it's going to be a different journey. And we got married at 38. And I remember having a conversation with my mother, who, it was kind of hoping to be a grandmother, and she said, she kind of brought some things up, and I'm like, all right, I probably have to face this head on. I said, I don't think we're going to be having kids, and that was a difficult conversation, but we kind of got through it. And I spent a lot of time there, talking with people when they're saying, oh, you guys are married now, when are you having kids? Oh, you'll change your mind. Oh, lots of people really want to get involved in your family planning conversations, which is fascinating. But it was also for us, we had nieces and nephews. We have a ton of friends and their kids. And my husband, we call him the toddler whisperer. Like, you throw him in a room with kids and they think, they're like, oh, Robert's my best friend, right? You're three, he's 33, whatever that is. We have this wonderful network of kids that we love. And just like you said, with candy and escape rooms, like, we are those people. Absolutely. And it is really fulfilling without the responsibility of all the other things. And we kind of like pinch ourselves. We're like, oh gosh, I'm glad we don't have the downside to what we see some people going through. But the fulfilling nature of saying we can be an important part of children's lives, and we know we are welcome and embraced by their parents. They're like, please come, please be a part of our kids' lives. You are family to us. It's really such an honor and an amazing feeling to have that still be such a big part of who we are and who we are in the world.
Yeah, and that's also why you know, when I wrote this book, A Wine Lover's Guide to Parenting, you know, some people have said like, well, you wrote this, but you're not a parent. And I was like, you know, but one, you know, it's all about decent human behavior. I was like, you don't need to be a parent to understand good human behavior. I said, but my unique vantage point as the beloved auntie, I get to witness the beautiful chaos of parenthood, you know, while bringing a refreshing judgment-free perspective. It allows, you know, my goal is to allow parents to be seen, validated, and it was also my contribution to trying to shape and make an impact on helping kids grow up. And, you know, I would say like you know, I've got the best seat in the house, and I've heard parents trade war stories like battle-hardened soldiers, you know, in the trenches. And sometimes when you're deep in it, it's not as easy to see, What's right in front of you. It's not as easy to see the grape juice you're drinking can turn into wine. That's where it came about because, I just started to see again as somebody who works in the wine industry and somebody who's on those sidelines invested in all these kids' interests. I just started to see the fun parallels, and so that's what, inspired me to create this homage to, to parents everywhere and to help shape, the future kids, the future generations.
Love it. Would you can you share some of the book? I know with again, it's you've kind of talked about it as like an adult children's book. So okay. All right. So for our the people seeing the video, you're holding up the book and it's Wine Lover's Guide to Parenting. Oh, it's got this fun little cover. Oh my gosh, it's really beautiful.
It's a Wine Lover's Guide to Parenting, the Fine Art of Wine, WINE, and Wine, WHINE, Management. So it's written like a children's book. So it's illustrated, it rhymes, but it's definitely not made for kids. It's 11 lessons on how to raise your kids well, all related to wine terminology. And every time I use wine terminology throughout the book, it gives the definition. At the back of the book, it gives a basic understanding of how wine is made. So it's really, it's not only for parents, aunts, uncles, grandparents, teachers. It's for anybody that loves a good humor book or wants to learn a little bit about wine. And, as I said, I'm a storyteller and somebody who works in the industry. I love the idea of making wine knowledge accessible. It doesn't need to be jarring or intimidating. It should be easy. So this chapter is you don't want your kids to ferment. So the fermentation process, just so you know, in wine making is when we convert sugar into alcohol. So you think of sugar as something sweet. Alcohol can, you think of as harsh or biting. So this chapter is about you want to teach your kids manners so they don't turn from someone sweet into someone harsh. Manners, manners, manners are the key to it all. These lessons need to start even when they're small. Teach them this from day one before they start to crawl. You don't want your kid to be the sour grape in the bunch and turn into a spoiled brat that kids want to punch. When they start talking, make sure they know thank you and please. And to always say bless you when they hear someone sneeze. Please and thank you are an absolute must. Without that, your child's a total bust. There's nothing worse than a child who has behavior that is crude, because it'll continue as they're older and become someone who's rude. People don't take kindly to and aren't nice to those with attitude, because it's very off-putting and puts others in a bad mood, oftentimes causing a confrontation and leads to a nasty feud. Wanting to put a little bit of poison in your child's food. Is that really how you want your kids to be viewed? Wouldn't you prefer they're someone who's wooed? Without manners, they'll ferment and turn into someone harsh and biting. They may turn into a kid who's rude, obnoxious, and always fighting. So teach your kids some manners and to have some heart and soul. Without that, your kid may well turn into an a-hole.
Definitely not for the kids, but so creative. And and a little while ago, you talked about how much you love rhyming, and boy, that is like at the heart of that storytelling. Oh my gosh, so fun. And I can
Thank
see
you.
how this is the kind of book that you keep in the bathroom, in the guest bathroom, and the people come over and they start leaping through it and come out of the bathroom laughing and saying, "Oh my gosh, that book."
Absolutely. I love making people laugh. So anyway, any opportunity I get to do so. So it's good fun. It's like I said, it's just basic human behavior. I don't proclaim to be a professional psychologist or parenting expert. It's just basic human decency, all rolled into a fun book.
Fun. Are you working on something new? Do you have visions of what
I
else you
mean,
might
I would
produce?
love, yes. Well, I'd love to. My next iteration is a Whiskey Lover's Guide to Dog Breeds. So that'll be framed a little different. But yeah, I'm hoping that this book, gets enough interest that maybe a publisher wants to publish that one because it's really hard, as you can imagine, to publish and promote a book on your own while you have a full-time job.
Well, that's great. Thank you so much for walking us through your story and delighting us with a little bit of wine and whine humor. I love it. I want to switch over to the quicksand three, which are the three questions I ask all my guests, and then we'll come back and tell people a little bit about more about how they can learn more about you and your book.
Great.
So the first question is, what is a way when you've been like avoiding or procrastinating that you get yourself to do something you've been waiting to do?
The word that comes to mind is pause. I mean, I'll bring it back to wine terminology, right? It's like that moment before you're taking the sip, you just pause, you nose it, you breathe it in. So many times we just need to pause, reset, refocus, re-energize. So whatever that pause moment is, whether it's just, step away from the computer or just, that's or take a walk. For me, that's my thing, is just take a beat.
I think about that being like when things are really kind of just in a crisis mode, the first thing you really want to do is say, wait, hold on a second. We need to stop and assess before we actually dive into whatever might be the wrong next step. So I love that.
Absolutely.
This is interesting since you've already done so many fun things, but if time and history and skills and money and all sorts of things were not an issue, what's a career or a job you might have liked to have tried?
Oh, I have two. I have two. I wish I like went into like the FBI and did forensics or something like that. I'm fascinated with true crime. I love it. I wish I went into that role as well. And the other one would be a travel and food writer. I mean, I love to travel. And when I travel, it's all about seeing a city through the food. I do so much research on like the restaurants. Man, if I could get paid to travel and write about and eat and write about it, that would have been a dream. I wish I thought about that when I was six.
And I feel like that's one of those things with the internet. Like, oh, I'm not sure people get paid to do that in the same way, but certainly influencers and all sorts of other people have figured out how
Yeah.
to make money doing that sort of thing if they're not writing for Food and Wine magazine. And finally, when life gets chaotic, how do you recharge or hit the reset button?
Travel.
Yeah.
Travel, see the
Yeah.
world, see that in the grand scheme of things, the world is bigger than me, and I want to see it all. I want to live it all. Even if it's just, get in my car and go somewhere, but that's my favorite way to reset, is just go somewhere else and see what else is out there.
And get some good food while you're there. That's great. Great.
Absolutely.
Danielle, thank you so much. Tell us more about how to learn about you and then find your book.
Thank you. My book can be found on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com. Again, it's a wine lover's guide to parenting. I have a website, DanielleFrankAuthor.com, and you can find me on Instagram at Create a Great Story.
Oh, back to the storytelling. I love it. Thank
Well,
you so
actually,
much.
you know
Oh,
what?
yeah,
I
go.
coined that ages ago, not about writing, because my friend, so I do so much research when I am traveling. Like, I just did a Spain trip with my best friend, and like I put together itineraries and I do research on the food and where to go and all that. And so years ago, friends told me, I should do a blog. This is when before people were blogging, but so I got the website createagreatstory.com, and so I made that my Instagram. I haven't done anything with that because, again, life and work, is priority, what pays my bills. But I wrote it because I think I'm creating a great story of my life. And so, but it works well because of now I'm being an
Now,
author.
you literally have created a great story. Good.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me on. This was lovely.
That was a fun conversation. I, as I said in the beginning, the idea of the world she has been in, the entertainment industry and Hollywood and kind of working with the fanciest wine labels and champagne labels that, we all know from all of this, like from movies and TV and magazines and Instagram and everything just coming to life. Like, what an kind of unrelatable life. But what was really relatable, right? Starting in a career that you thought you'd love, and then it turns out it wasn't a great fit. Finding places that align with your values and knowing when something isn't aligned with your values and you have to make a big change that has big ramifications. Relationships not going in the way you hoped, but really being able to question, is it, is this about what I wanted, or is it about what I wanted to hear? And being able to say, I'm willing to risk making a change, even if it means some other life choices come off the table. And the idea of being able to say, I had some dreams in my past life of things that were important to me. Could I bring those back to life at this age in midlife, in our 50s, to say, this is kind of important to me, and I do have what it takes to put it out there? I loved the resilience of all of those stories, and I think all of that is relatable to every single one of us, even if you don't live a fancy life in Los Angeles. I hope you enjoyed Danielle's story. And maybe if you're going to a baby shower sometime soon, you're going to find the Wine Lover's Guide to Parenting and stick that in the gift and get a little chuckle out of it yourself. Go check out that book. Thanks so much for being here.